2:30 to 4 Monday to Friday. It is the Blitz here on AM 1450. Mitch Widmeyer locked in with you until 4 o'clock. Going to the guest lines and joining us today, Jim Sonnes. He is a writer and podcaster for Number Fire. Always love having him on. Did that song suit you a little better? Because last week I played a song that you said you had never heard of that I remembered listening to when I was growing up and riding around in my mom's car. So I played Billy Joel for you this time around.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely. Right when it came on, I started bobbing my head. Thankfully, it's radio, so no one could see the embarrassing gyrations that I was busting out. But I can always jam to Billy Joel. That is 100% a good call.
I'm glad I hit a home run on that one then. We'll jump right in. What in the heck are we watching with Bartolo Colon in his last three starts? Like, what is going on?
I have no idea. That's a really good question, because I honestly have no idea. And as a person who, you know, works in daily fantasy, it's a bit frustrating because I want to use players who are facing Bartolo Colon due to the amount of hard contact he allows, and he's like, nah, man, that's not going to happen. You know, 5 strikeouts last night, that's tied for the most he's had since May 20th. He did have that in his last start, too, but he did it in a bit of a more efficient manner. So I don't know, man. I mean, it's fun to watch, you know, seeing him do this. But, I mean, overall, he is still allowing a bit too much hard contact. It was 39% 3 starts ago, 47% against Texas, and then 52% against Milwaukee. So I wouldn't say that he has fully turned things around. But, hey, you know, if he can get some strikeouts, he can avoid the walks, as he always has kind of done, he can be a usable starting pitcher. And I think that's kind of where we're at right now with Colon, is a usable starting pitcher. And when you're now suddenly kind of making a push for the playoffs, you'll take that for sure.
And it surely is a far cry from the dude who said after his first start with the Twins, I believe it was against the Yankees, said that the next start would determine whether or not he was going to retire.
Right.
And now he's had 3 straight really good starts for the Twins.
Yeah, he has. It's been really fun to watch. You know, I mean, as a Twins fan, it's fun to see Colon, you know, doing some stuff. I think people universally tend to like Bartolo Colon, so it's good for Twitter chatter, seeing people get excited about that. So from those perspectives, it's all great. And, I mean, I just think that the Twins are at the point where they need starters who can just be passed. But their offense is still pretty good. They're swinging the bats really well right now. The bullpen has been eons better the past month than they were before that. So if they can just get passable starting pitching, then they'll be setting themselves up for a nice little run here. Their playoff odds at 10% right now, according to Number Fire. So, hey, you know, if they can keep getting this out of Bartolo Colon, I see absolutely no reason to complain.
Is this sustainable with him? If I set the time frame, Jim, to the end of September, is this sustainable on a somewhat semi-basis with the starts that he has produced? You mentioned the hard hit rate. Do you guys at Number Fire have any other numbers that would suggest one way or the other?
I mean, all the numbers that I see suggest that it's not sustainable, but Bartolo Colon has always been kind of a weird dude when it comes to these numbers. So he was underperforming relative to where he should have been when he was with the Braves. He's now overperforming with the Twins. So it's probably just regression, kind of, you know, working its course. He doesn't get a lot of whiffs, and I know that that's not really the way he pitches. You know, he pitches to get strikes looking. So I get that's kind of the way that he operates. But if you're not going to get swinging strikes and you're allowing as much hard contact as he has, you're going to be setting yourself up for some scary outings. So in the long run, I would still assume that he has a lot more bumpy outings heading forward, but that's fine. You know, I mean, it's kind of, he's there to suck up innings, you know, just to take up time in that rotation. If he can do that, fine. You know, if he allows 5 runs in an outing, that still at least kind of gives the Twins a chance to win. So just be Bartolo Colon, be whatever you are, and the Twins will be okay. So I don't expect it to keep up, but he doesn't really need it to be as good as it has been to still be a usable starting pitcher.
Always enjoy our time with him. Jim Sonnes, our guest this afternoon here on the Blitz. He's a writer and podcaster for Number Fire. The Twins themselves have won 4 in a row, and every time those like myself want to count them out, they creep right back into the hunt. I still don't think they make the playoffs this year when it's all said and done, but I want to be proven wrong about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, too, I think, again, it's kind of like we talked about around the trade deadline when the Jaime Garcia trade happened. It's almost the best of both worlds. They've been contending all season. Then they fell out of contention for a bit and allowed them to add some nice pieces like Dietrich N, Zach Littell, or Zach Little at the at the trade deadline for Jaime Garcia now ends up with the rotation. I think that Littell's pitching well enough to say that he could be a good part of that going forward. They got Steven Gonsalves now in AAA. So things are trending well with the young guys, and they're still playing well. So I kind of view this as being an ideal scenario for the Twins across the board. Have some fun this year, win some baseball games, which they have done, but then set yourself up well for runs going forward. And I think that they have done that. So honestly, even if they don't want to make it into playoffs this year, this can be chalked up as being a successful season for Minnesota. I think they've performed well while also setting themselves up well for the future. So it's kind of, you know, like I said, it's the best it could have gone through my eyes.
Are you telling me in the week since we have last spoken, you have still not figured out if it's Little or Littell? Because you limped in there with that. I could have helped you out. Like, I could have looked it up in the last week, but you used Little and Littell. Do you know which one it is?
I have no idea, to be fully honest.
Wait till he gets to the major league squad, and then we'll figure it out?
No, it is. That's 100%, because Baseball Reference doesn't get players' pronunciations until they are in the big leagues. And that's where I go for all my pronunciations. You know, like Paul DeJong, I can go right there, bop, boom, it's good, it's awesome. I can look at his pronunciation there. But Little isn't on Baseball Reference. His minor league profile is, and that's where you can find out that his middle name is Stewart, so he's Stewart Little. I really hope it's Little for that reason alone. But his pronunciation isn't up there. So I'm rattled, Mitch. I'm shook. I don't know what to do here.
We could look up, like, YouTube highlights of him playing somewhere.
I've done that.
Oh, you've done
that? I've 100% done that, yeah.
Nothing. Or you've done that before with different players, you mean?
Yeah, with different players.
Oh,
I have 100% done that. Like Dylan G, I found out how to say his name by watching a video he did with Sesame Street back when he first came up with the Mets. And he said, oh, no, it's pronounced like the letter G. And I'm like, oh, awesome, sweet, this is easy. So whether it's Sesame Street, Baseball Reference, whatever, I just need resources for finding a pronunciation. And for we'll call him Stuart Little for now. Those don't exist yet.
I like that nickname. Let me lob this question your direction. The Twins took the first two at Target Field against Milwaukee, and I saw some in their write-up saying the Twins swept the Brewers. Do you view this as I'm genuinely curious. Do you view this as two-game series or 1-4-game series? Because we see, like, Kansas City and St. Louis do it. I'm guessing the Yankees and the Mets, where it's four games, mm-hmm. and we've seen it implemented in the last couple of years. It's four games with these rivalry or border rival squads in Major League Baseball, and it's two at one stadium, two at the next. Like, if the Twins win tonight against the Brewers, can we say that they've swept two straight series? Because it certainly sounds a lot more appealing.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's a really good way. And honestly, if you sweep a four-game series, that sounds pretty sweet, too. So either way, it's going to sound cool. I guess I've always considered it to be two separate series, personally. But it would also make sense to do it the other way. So I don't know. I think it's all a thought process. You know, what constitutes a series? Does that have to do with the venue? Does that have to do with the opponent? So I don't know. That's the baseball philosophers out there will have to, I guess, expound further upon that.
Jim Sonnis with us this afternoon on the Blitz. Players are wearing jerseys with nicknames on the back at the end of August. Who stole the show for you? Because I was a big fan of Kyle Seager.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, going with Corey's brother on the back of his jersey. To me, out of all the ones I saw, and I'm sure there's a lot of hidden gems out there, but that was the best one I noticed yesterday.
100%. Kyle Seager stole the show. I love his. Eric Thames is his nickname from back in Korea, which I believe translates to either real man or something else that's mildly less appropriate for radio. So depending on how you want to do it, Eric Thames is pretty good. I like that one quite a bit. I'm trying to think of other ones. Joe Mauer's very original, being just Mauer. Robbie Grossman, the same thing. So, you know, I think that they're good contenders, but Kyle Seager, for me, was 100% the winner. I kind of want to buy his jersey now because of it.
You brought up Joe Mauer. I was going to ask you about that. You weren't surprised at all that Joe Mauer just went with Mauer, right? Like, but
no.
And then on the other end, I'm like, he's had to have a nickname in high school growing up, whether it's stuck or not, that he could have used. Joe Mauer just seems like the plain Jane kind of guy. He's just going to put Mauer on there. I saw, like, for my Cubbies, John Lester has just Lester on his. But I look at him and I'm like, John Lester just doesn't give a rip. Like, he seems like the kind of guy who would get angry if someone put a nickname on the back of his jersey.
Yeah, it was 100%. Like, when I saw the Twins were out, I was like, oh, man, what's Joe going to do? Like, I assumed it was going to be Joe. And, like, if you remember the Eduardo Escobar name game video from earlier in the year where he was trying to guess people's names in spring training, he called Joe Joji there. I would have been great with that. You know, that would have been a lot of fun. Otherwise, I was thinking there were these old commercials for an MLB video game that Joe Mauer was in, and they would always say the end of it was, "Well played, Mauer." And like, it's this like line that's just stuck in my head. So I kind of wished he had gone with "well played," like on the back of his jersey, but he didn't do it. So Joe, next time, please consult with us before doing your nickname, and we will get you a better one than your last name.
Who had the coolest Twins one? Which one did you really clamor towards?
I believe Max Kepler's is his dad's name, which is pretty cool. It has the umlaut on it, which is really fun. So I would be probably leaning towards him. Eduardo Escobar's, I don't know what it translates to, but I think this is El de la Pica, which means he of the blank, which might be fisherman or something like that. I don't know. It's probably funny. Eduardo Escobar is a cool dude who seems super strange. So I would say either Max Kepler or Eduardo Escobar would probably be my two choices.
How about Manny Machado going with Mr. Miami? And he's from Miami, but Miami's a big place. It's a little bold self-assigning there by Machado. I like the move, though, because it is bold.
Well, how many Orioles fans are going to buy a jersey that says Mr. Miami in the back? I don't know. Probably not too many. So, I don't know. I think if the intent is to sell jerseys, maybe not. But, hey, you know, he's Manny Machado. He's a superstar within this league. He can kind of do what he wants. I am not going to be the one who tells Machado what to do because he seems to be a little bit of a temper. So I'm probably not going to try to get on his bad side. It's the best nickname I've ever seen, Manny. It is awesome.
He's a writer and a podcaster for Number Fire, Jim Sonnes, with us this afternoon. I think I asked you this last week. I might as well ask you again this week. Things constantly changing in the standings. To me, and I could be proven wrong, Jim, but the only playoff spots that I see up for grabs from here on in will be the second wild card spot in the American League. I think the Red Sox, Yankees both get into postseason. Could be interchangeable who wins the East, who gets the first wild card spot. But I think the second wild card spot in the AL is going to be up for grabs, and then whoever wins the NL Central. So who are your favorites to take both of those spots, and what do the number fire numbers say?
Yeah, so right now looking at that second spot in the American League, it's kind of spread out pretty thin. It seems like the Mariners have the best chances of grabbing it. They're at 41.7% right now to make the playoffs overall. The Rays are right there, followed by the Royals and the Twins. And I generally like Seattle. The problem is that their rotation just can't stay healthy. Felix Hernandez is back on the disabled list now. I think that they will make it eventually because they have an awesome offense. Their pitching is good. Again, injured, but good. I think I would favor them slightly over the Rays for right now. As far as the National League, I mean, I've kind of shifted on this just because they've been so stupidly good since the All-Star break, but I'd bet that the Cubs do wind up getting in there. I don't know if they will be, as the division winner as it seems right now, or if it'll wind up being as a wild card, but it seems like they should be solid for the division. And then I like the Cardinals, man. I think that they're a fun team. They've got a lot of really good assets. Matt Carpenter, one of the most underappreciated batters in baseball. Dexter Fowler just came back. Mentioned Paul DeJong before. He's playing good baseball. So I kind of hope it's the Cardinals because I think they'd be fun to watch in the postseason. I want to see Carlos Martinez on a big stage. So I think right now I would go with the Mariners and the Cardinals.
It's interesting you brought up the Cubs and you said maybe they win the NL Central, maybe it's a wild card spot. If you end up getting two from the Central, it would require the Rockies or the Diamondbacks to crumble a little bit. Do you see that as a possibility? I would expect probably not a great chance of that happening. And I guess I'll follow up and layer on top. If it was to be one of those two teams, the Diamondbacks or Rockies, to crumble a little bit, who do you think would do that?
It was the Rockies, and that's kind of not something that would surprise me at all, personally, just because I think that their pitching has overperformed quite a bit this year. And their offense, frankly, is kind of bad, which is weird, given that they play in Colorado. But when you take them out of Coors Field, they currently have the worst. It's called WRC+, which is weighted runs created, and what it does is it accounts for park factor. And right now, the Rockies are dead last against right-handed pitching. And they've got a lot of lefties. They're not a lot better against lefties either. They've had some injuries. Greg Holland not at 100% right now. Their rotation, again, I think, has overperformed a bit. So I actually am kind of expecting a little bit of a slide here from Colorado, which is why I was mentioning the St. Louis Cardinals there, is I think that they have a chance. Right now they're pretty far behind. I think it's like 7 games, but I think they could kind of do it. So I'm not writing that off right now just because I think St. Louis is a lot better than Colorado. So I really am not going to write that off right now. Arizona, I think, is fine. I think that they're rock solid. But Colorado right now is a big different question for me.
I want to bop back to the American League real quick. What's going wrong with the Astros? They've lost two in a row. They're 3-7 in their last 10. And who do you like in the American League to come out winning the pennant as we sit here on August 10th?
It's still the Astros for me. The injuries are concerning because they've had a lot of them, but they did just get George Springer back last night. The rotation is concerning, but they should get Carlos Correa back too. And I think that generally in the postseason, we think of, you know, looking at teams that have great rotations. But if Houston just clobbers them all, I'm not really sure how much it'll matter. And the rotation isn't awful, even with Dallas Keuchel kind of being rough right now. Charlie Morton's a good pitcher, so I don't think they're awful. Colin McHugh is now back. I don't think they're awful in the rotation. It's definitely a weakness, but their bullpen is great. Their offense is great. I still do think they're the favorites. Cleveland, to me, is still obviously the number two pick there. You know, hopefully Michael Brantley's okay. Jay Bruce should help out there. But I do think that Houston, to me, is the number one right now.
We'll finish up with some fantasy football items. Asked you a plethora of questions last week. What rookies do you think can sneak into or are sneaking into some of the early rounds? Are there any wideouts or running backs that fit the bill?
Yeah, Leonard Fournette's going super early in draft. Same thing with Joe Mixon and Dalvin Cook. They're all going at the pretty high end of the board as far as running back goes within the first four rounds. And I think I'm really worried about Joe Mixon going there because their offensive line just got destroyed this offseason. So I'm not super enthused about him going there. Fournette has questions because his quarterback is awful and you're not sure how many touchdown drives he'll generate, but I'm kind of okay with him. And Cook I'm okay with as well. So of those three guys, I would be most inclined to draft Fournette and Cook where they're currently going. But Mixon for me is a little bit too rich for my taste. And as far as rookie wide receivers, there's really not a whole lot at the top end to speak of.
What about Christian McCaffrey? You brought up three running backs. He was not one of them. Where does he fit in? And the Joe Mixon thing kind of surprises me, I guess, because I believe they still have Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard on top of the dismantlement of their offensive line in the offseason.
Yeah, they do. I think that the reason that people kind of assume that Mixon will be able to take on the load there is that they traded up in the second round to get him. And when you look at the actions of our front office, those speak a lot louder than depth charts. They traded up in the second round to get Joe Mixon. So I would assume he does wind up getting, you know, the lion's share of their carries there. And that's probably not going to be the case for Christian McCaffrey. Jonathan Stewart is still there. They re-signed him this offseason, which means that they still want him around. Yes, McCaffrey is going to be a big part of the offense, and yes, he's going to be heavily involved in the passing game. But from a rushing standpoint, I would assume it's still Jonathan Stewart, and I would also assume that Cam Newton still gets some volume, even though he's trying to rush less this year. He's still going to get some goal line carries. So McCaffrey is up there. I am not super inclined to draft him at his cost either, just because I don't really see the path to that much, as much upside as you would need at his cost. So I think of those guys, again, it's Cook and Fournette for me at their cost. Mixon and McCaffrey I'm a bit more skeptical on.
Who do you have rated as your top three quarterback options in fantasy? Not rookies, just overall best three options at quarterback. And where is that first one being plucked off the board in most standard drafts?
Well, Aaron Rodgers is pretty clearly the number one for me, and it's by a significant margin, just because we've seen him be so good for so long in an offense that does enjoy throwing the football. So Aaron Rodgers is number one for me. I just never get early-round quarterbacks. I tend to go late, so I will not have Aaron Rodgers. I honestly couldn't tell you where his ADP is. I mean, I can tell you. It's the early part of the third round, but like, I never consider him, so it doesn't really matter to me. And then I have Tom Brady is my second guy. Drew Brees is my third. But again, I'm not getting any of those guys, so I don't really bother, I guess, looking at them. The guys I'm targeting most wind up being Tyrod Taylor, Andy Dalton, and sometimes actually Sam Bradford, just because he's facing New Orleans in week one. I really don't mind drafting him in fantasy leagues.
It seems like there's a ton of really good wide receiver one options. You got like Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham, AJ Green. What's the difference between one and two and like six and seven when you're drafting these wide receivers?
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the tiers there. So I have Antonio Brown is basically to me in a tier of his own because of the amount of floor and upside that he has each week. I would say he's kind of by himself. I go Odell Beckham and Julio Jones in that second tier by themselves. I have OBJ ahead of Julio Jones there. And then I think there's a bit of a drop-off to A.J. Green, but he is my number four guy. And then I kind of see another drop-off from A.J. Green down to Mike Evans / Jordy Nelson. So wide receiver to me, even though, you know, it's like linear where it goes from one to the next to the next to the next, I think there are some pretty big drop-offs in overall production. So if you're doing like an auction draft, I would be willing to spend a good amount more on Antonio Brown than I would on Julio Jones. I would spend more on Odell Beckham and Julio Jones than I would on A.J. Green. That's kind of why I think auction drafts are the way to go, because you can do stuff like that and react to football the way that it actually is. So there are significant gaps there, but I think you did nail the top four for me with Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham, Julio Jones, and A.J. Green.
We'll wrap it up on this. I'm asking out of sheer curiosity. So I was talking to Paul this morning. I had mentioned that I was going to, he's like, hey, who do you got lined up for today? And I said, I'm going to be talking to Jim Sonnis this afternoon. And I said, by the way, because he asked what we were talking about, and I said, fantasy football is one of the items on the agenda. I said, who's his favorite NFL team? Because I know you're Northwestern. I know you're the Twins. And he just smiled at me, and he's like, oh, just ask him. And I didn't know what, like, I didn't know where, okay, well, now your sigh makes it sound like, I didn't know if you were going to throw out, like, the Patriots or the Steelers or something like that, but your sigh tells me that you're a fan of a not-so-good team.
I wish I were a fan of the Patriots. That'd be fun. But I'm not. Paul told me to ask me that for a reason, because I'm a Jets fan. I have a Chad Pennington figurine sitting on my shelf right now, staring back at me. I have a Nick Mangold jersey. I had a Chad Pennington jersey, I think, at one point, but I'm not sure where it is right now. So I'm a pretty big Jets fan. I do root for the Vikings. They're easily my number two team, but ever since I was little, I mean, my first year liking football is 98 when Gary Anderson missed that kick. And, like, you can't be a Vikings fan if that's your first experience with football. So I wound up being a Jets fan. It's upsetting. I not stand Christian Hackenberg, and I will vomit on the floor if he winds up starting for them this year. But I, you know, I guess it got to kind of stick with my allegiances. So, yeah, Paul nailed that one. It was good recommendation on his. I am a Jets fan, yeah.
I remember actually tweeting you, now that you bring that up, when you tweeted out a picture, it was a while back, a few months ago, of the Chad Pennington bobblehead that you have, and I just assumed like maybe you were a Pennington lifer. I never added that together. Let me ask you this then. Knowing that Sam Darnold could loom in next year's draft, Josh Rosen, some of these other really good quarterbacks, like, would you prefer the Jets to go, if you had to choose one or the other, 7-9 this year, where you know they aren't getting to the playoffs, but they're going to win, play some competitive football? Would you rather have them go 7-9 or 1-15?
7-9 is the worst record you could have in the National Football League, and it's not even close, because the value in picking at the top end of the first and then also picking at the top end of the second in every single round is so huge. So, honestly, I really hope they don't win this year. Like, and that's weird to say. I'm not quite that way with the Twins. You know, it's great to get Royce Lewis this year. I was all in favor of that. I'm not really a tanking person, but, like, there's just no reason for this roster to win. And they probably won't anyway, so I'm not worried about them winning games. That's not a big thing I see happening. But, like, going 0-16 could be awesome. I'm not really sure what to think about Sam Darnold, because he's only played 1 year, and quarterback experience is huge as far as predicting which guys will thrive in the NFL. So, I'm not sure where I am on there, but having the opportunity to get him, get Rosen, get one of those guys. I like Baker Mayfield, too. He's had some legal troubles, but he's a really good player. So there are a lot of good quarterbacks in the draft, so I'm really hoping they just blow it up and go 0-16, trade down in the first round, and go from there. Take the Cleveland Browns way.
Wow, never thought you'd be saying that, did you? Take the Cleveland Browns.
I love the Browns. No, the Browns might be my third favorite team of football, to be fully honest. Just the way they operate is awesome, and Cody Kessler is the best quarterback in football, so why not?
Wow, check out his stuff at Number Fire. Jim, as always, it's a blast, man.
Thank you, Mitch. I appreciate it, and good luck if you have any drafts coming up.
Yes, we will review the Timberwolves' new uniforms next.